So our next speaker is István Rácz, who finished the university in Debrecen as a high school teacher. Then he was actually a high school teacher for some years. And then he made the candidate degree at our institute, at the Wigner Institute. His supervisor was Zoltán Perjés. And then he got a Soros Foundation's scholarship to work with Robert Wald. Yeah, collaborated with Wald. And then he got a postdoc in Japan, both in Tokyo and in Kyoto, in the Yukawa Institute. And then he's our research professor at the Wigner Research Center. And he will talk about the cosmic sensor.
Thanks for the long introduction. I couldn't pay attention. As we all know, the symmetry played a distinguished role in Wigner's investigations. And the attempt in this talk is to indicate how the concept of symmetries can be related to the most important unresolved issues in general relativity, namely the strong cosmic sensor hypothesis of bundles. So let me start with a story. Years ago, one of my educated colleagues from the theoretical department started a talk about general relativity, and he said that don't mystify, Einstein's equation is, Einstein's equation is likewise, all the other equations have a left-hand side and the right-hand side, and the equation tells you that these are equal to each other. I would like to say that it was up to a certain extent right, but when you think about, you know, only the Ricci part, and you consider a vacuum problem in four dimensions, and you write out the Ricci tensor in local coordinates, then even the lower order terms here, which are, you know, the square of gamma, can be given by quotients of eighth order polynomials of the metric tensor and its first derivatives. And this also explains immediately, you know, why it was so difficult to solve Einstein's equations. I mean, I would like to emphasize they are pretty nonlinear equations. Sorry. So these are pretty nonlinear equations, and people were not able to solve them without assuming algebraic specialness of the curvature tensor or assuming several symmetries acting on the spacetime. One of the main hunters was my former supervisor, Zoltán Perjés, who was really, brilliant in solving these equations under certain symmetries. And also, I would like to mention that they are unfashioned nowadays, because these solutions, the exact solutions, represent only some isolated points or parts in the space of solutions. So these are not generic solutions. And this gives a very good perspective to the results of Yvonne Choquet-Bruhat. She will be 100 years, by the way, in December. And she, by introducing a very brilliant gauge fixing, she was able to put Einstein's equations into a set of evolution equations, namely coupled quasi-linear wave equations. And she first showed the existence and uniqueness of local solution. And there is another very celebrated result by her and Bob Geroch. They proved the existence of unique maximal Cauchy developments. Maximal, I mean, unique up to diffeomorphism invariance of the theory, but this is sufficient. And in short terms, we could say that, you know, the Einstein theory or the general relativity has a very positive initial value formulation. And this all, you know, provides us very various tools to talk about, you know, how we can determine the metric and the matter fields using the coupled Einstein matter equations, knowing, you know, what was happening in the past. So it's not local in the sense István told us, you know, all the past history is really coming into. It's dangerous to get there, no? So it's coming from the concentrated in the point where we would like to determine the field values. I would like to also emphasize here that since GR has no fixed background, the topology of the manifold representing the space of the events need not to be Rn, even though it's locally assumed to be Rn. And this is coming in one of the examples very soon. And what makes the Cauchy problem the most interesting is that, you know, not only the metric, but the manifold, which is, you know, holding the metric in the space-time is determined simultaneously by solving the Cauchy problem or the initial value problem in the theory. And then one could ask, I mean, could the predictive power of Einstein's theory be limited some way? And, you know, all those knowledge which was coming from the exact solution era showed that there are special space times where we have a, you know, in the Kerr space time, for instance, where we have a Cauchy surface such that it cannot be larger in any way in the maximal analytic, you know, Penrose diagram of the Kerr solution, and the Cauchy development of this data is limited here, cannot cover these parts. And another one which will play a very important role in our later discussions is the Taubnut spacetime, which was called by Wheeler as the counterexample to everything in GR. It has the manifold structure R cos S3. And, you know, these S3s are just indicated by circles here on the figure. It has the symmetry group SU2 cross U1. The line element is given here. What is really interesting for us is, you know, the location and the tilting of the light cones here. We have a U1 symmetry, which is, you know, going around here. So I just draw one of the larger disks here, and the other larger disks are following, you know, the light cones, and they are spiraling around these boundaries. And when we, you know, specify initial data on the sigma initial data surfaces, t equals 0, t equals 1, plus 1 and minus 1 is distinguished on this figure, then we can determine the future evolution up to this boundary, the past evolution. I mean, there is a possibility to predict the past also using the predictive power of Einstein theory up to this. And then there is a boundary, the Cauchy horizon, future Cauchy horizon and the past Cauchy horizon. And what is even more interesting, above these horizons, or through any event, there is a closed time-like curve, which could be interpreted as we have a time machine below, or, you know, later or earlier in this figure. So something is, you know, indicated by this example that we should be very careful. And one may ask, you know, what was the reaction of the community? And people were saying that, like Penrose, you know, it would be very, very dangerous losing the predictive power of Einstein theory. So he claimed that sufficiently generic spacetimes, this is very vague, sufficiently generic spacetimes are maximal global hyperbolic developments, so they cannot be part of a larger spacetime. And what I would like to talk about is a result which is related to a conjecture by Vince Moncrief. He reformulated this cosmic sensor hypothesis for a special case of spacetimes. He investigated in the early 80s the possible close cosmological models. Doubled spacetime is, you know, one of those. But he really an expert on these cosmological spacetimes, and he concluded that if a spacetime possesses a compact Cauchy horizon, then it always admits a Killing vector field, which is null on the horizon and space-like in the domain of dependence. Or yes, okay, and you know, because space-time symmetries are non-generic. I mean, they are always special. The space-times which possess symmetries, they are not generic. If this conjecture is true, then we have a indirect verification of the Penrose strong cosmic central hypothesis, at least for space-times admitting a compact Cauchy horizon. And you know, the progress was really slow. You know, Moncrief was involved in the beginning, and he published together with Jim Eisenberg a paper basically 40 years ago, and it ended this year. And there were some important results in the halfway through, but you know, all of these results before a couple of years ago were always assumed that we have either an analytic space-time. Analyticity is not compatible with Einstein's theory of gravity because it should be, and Newtonian theory is also analytic because we have an analytic equation for the Poisson, you know, in the Poisson equation. For the Newtonian potential. So smoothness is important. And here also it was assumed for long that the generators are closed. I would like to show that how can overcome of this. So our result, which was covered by the last paper, basically collected all the information what we had in the Taubner type space-time. So we considered smooth connected time-oriented space-times of dimension n, which is greater than or equal to 2, so arbitrary. We assume that there is a closed causal topological hypersurface in the space-time such that the Cauchy development of that is a proper subset. So we assume that it can be continued. And then we also assume that the Cauchy horizon, the boundary of that future or past Cauchy development is non-empty and compact. The compactness was important here. And then, you know, using, you know, results from differential geometry, one can show that if the null convergence condition hold, which is basically related to the Ricci tensor, which is identically satisfied, I mean, immediately satisfied in the case of vacuum, then we have that the horizon is smooth, totally geodesic manifold, which means that if we start a geodesic tangent to the horizon with a tangent vector, then the geodesic is remaining in there, and it's foliated by these sort of geodesics, which are, of course, null because it has to be a null hypersurface. And it also follows that there should be a smooth function and a smooth non-vanishing vector field such that the geodesic equation with not a finely parameterized form has to be satisfied. What we assumed explicitly was that V can be rescaled such that this kappa will be constant throughout the horizon. Later, you know, two groups with much longer papers than we published on the whole interesting part, they proved that this is true if they use our assumptions. Actually, my co-worker or co-author was a PhD student when we finished this investigation, and he needed the publication, so he was eager to publish without proving this in the paper. So then we also have that, you know, there is a non-vanishing one-form tangent field such that the tangent field or tangent bundle of this horizon can be given by this direct sum, and one of these constituencies is just the kernel of this, and it's more important that there is locally in the neighborhood of the horizon there is a time function, the gradient of which is everywhere transverse to the horizon. Then our main result can be given as given here or read here. So if we have a vanishing Ricci tensor and a compact Cauchy horizon in our spacetime, such that its surface gravity can be normalized to a non-zero constant, as I told you, we assumed, then regardless of the generators, if the generators are closed or ergodic, which is very interesting. I mean, even in the closed case, you can have a Hopf vibration of S3, or, you know, not metrically S3, but topologically S3 as a compact Cauchy horizon. So if these are satisfied, then we have a non-trivial Killing vector field, which means that, you know, the metric is invariant under the flow, which is generated by one parameter family of diffeomorphisms of this vector field on the union of the horizon and the Cauchy development, such that this vector field is light-like on the horizon, space-like near the horizon in the Cauchy development site, and any smooth extension of that vector field to the complement of the Cauchy development near the horizon is time-like. So actually, you know, in the very generic case, one can recover all the properties which were indicated by the Talmud solution, but Talmud solution is not the only one. I mean, we could have various, you know, compact topologies for these spacetimes. And I would like to, how many minutes I have? Okay, so I would like to show, I mean, of course, I'm not going to show you the whole proof, but there were two key observations, and I'm proud both because they are somehow interesting. First of all, we had to use a pair of coupled wave equation, which is relating an arbitrary vector field V, I mean, at this moment, this is an arbitrary vector field, to the lead derivative of the metric and the lead. So here is the V vector field. Here is a wave operator, you know, covariant derivatives contracted with contracted indices. So these are wave equations, and it refers to V, the lead derivative of the metric, and the lead derivative of the Ricci tensor, and this. This equation, a pair of wave equation, was derived without using any field equation. I mean, it's coming from the geometry for an arbitrary vector field. So it has to satisfy by any metric, in any metric theory of gravity. I mean, not only in Einstein theory. And we use this pair of wave equation to show that, you know, if we have initial data on the compact Cauchy horizon, then we can propagate it into the Cauchy development. And, you know, there are many interesting points here, but what is really important that on the horizon, this wave operator can be given in terms of, you know, derivative of, I mean, this is a transfer derivative with respect to the time function, and we have a tangent field to the null generators of the horizon. And also we have some lower order terms which are referring to derivatives within the hypersurface. So on the horizon, this equation was important to be used to to show that you know, the second point, which was important to demonstrate, that not only the Lie derivative of the metric here, but with respect to a to be or candidate giving vector field B, but also, you know, the transverse derivatives, these are the transverse derivatives up to any order, vanish on the horizon. So this is, you know, this is an inductive proof what can be done here, and we just simply denote it by this arbitrary, you know, transfer derivative of this Lie derivative of the space-time metric as a symmetric two tensor field, which is a symmetric two tensor field on this this space, and we defined a metric on the symmetric two tensor fields, which is denoted by this gothic G, referring to the original space-time metric, and here, you know, this is just, you know, transverse derivatives of the Lie derivatives, and we have to guarantee that, you know, all these derivatives or all these tensor fields are really vanishing on the horizon. And because you know, the metric is was positive definite on the kernel of omega, which was mentioned in the end of the assumptions, we have that this metric is positive definite. So just think about, we have a smooth tensor field. Here is a metric, smooth, because everything is smooth there. So it's a function. And it's the question, you know, how one can really prove that this function has to vanish when we have, you know, closed orbit. This is an equation which can be derived from the wave equation and its time derivatives here on the horizon. And when we know that, you know, there is periodicity along the generator, the only periodic solution of this body, this is a derivative with respect to the parametrization of the vector field here, is the identity zero solution, so along each curve. But what happens when the generators are not closing, so they are ergodic, they are getting arbitrarily close to their previous point, but they never close. And this required the maximum principle, namely, because this is a smooth function, this term has to vanish at the location where it takes this smooth function on a compact set, takes the maximum or the minimum. And at that location, if beta is non-zero, which is basically referring to the quantity, a non-zero constant, what we used in the proof, then we have that this has to be zero there. So this function, we don't know, you know, how this, you know, behaves along the generators. We cannot refer to periodicity, but we can refer to the maximum and the minimum, location of the maximum and the minimum values. And at both, these are vanishing. So there is no other chance that it has to vanish everywhere. So this was really a big trick we could overcome to include all the generic orbits or generators of the horizon. I thought I'm standing here, so probably I should stop, but I already told you, you know, what is the main message, that we proved that any smooth vacuum spacetime containing a compact Cauchy horizon with surface gravity that can be normalized to a non-zero constant admits the Killing vector field. So this was the conjecture by Vince, but we could also prove this. And here we proved it for the smooth scales, and you know, without assuming any specialness of the generators of the topology of the compact Cauchy horizon. And this, you know, provides a sort of support for the validity of the strong cosmic sensor hypothesis of Penrose. So thanks for your attention.
Thank you.
One quick question.
In your proof, you had this key relation between the lead derivative and the covariant derivative. Did you have to assume that it's torsion-free, the covariant derivative?
It was related, we assume that we have a metric theory of gravity.
Yes.
And the covariant derivative was assumed to be the metric compatible covariant derivative. Yes, in this sense, it's torsion-free. Yes.
Thank you very much. So please take it. And let's thank the speaker again.